Israelites, they had started this cycle now of rebellion against God, and then the judgment of God coming in the form of oppression by an enemy nation. They cry out to God for help, and He raises up a judge to deliver them. The first judge was Othniel. We go to verse 11 of chapter 3. I know I'm messing Larry up already. And it says that the land had rest for 40 years, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. And that sort of is the pattern, too. When God raised the judge up and He used that judge to deliver the Israelites, then usually, not always, but usually for the life of that judge, while he was in the judgeship, Israel would, for the most part, remain obedient. And then when the judge died, they would turn away from God and the cycle would start again. So that's where we are in verse 12, and it says, right after Othniel passed away, and it says, "And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. And he, that is Eglon, gathered unto him the children of Ammon and Amalek, and went and smote Israel, and possessed the city of palm trees." I don't know how long the rebellion lasted before judgment came. But at some point after Othniel's death, the children of Israel, for the most part, began to rebel against God, began to serve the false gods of the Canaanites again. And so God brought judgment on them. And this time the judgment was in the form of Eglon, the king of Moab. He came against Israel. And verse 13 says that he came and possessed the city of palm trees. If you remember when we talked about the overthrow of Jericho one time, I think when we were going through the book of Joshua, it was known as the city of palm trees. This was not that Jericho. Probably the Israelites, I assume, had constructed a city somewhere close to where Jericho had been. Because you remember, God pronounced a curse on anyone who would rebuild the city of Jericho. So this was some city that was close to the site of Jericho. And so they referred to it as the city of palm trees. That's the city that he took. But apparently it was a major city, influential, because now verse 14 says, "So the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. So for 18 years now, they're under the oppression of an enemy nation, of a foreign king, however you want to say it. One thing that I wanted to mention, I think we talked last week about how that sinful man progressively gets worse. You know, we don't naturally get better. Progressively, we get worse. Somewhere over here, let's see if I can find it. Larry doesn't have to show it on the screen. I think it's verse 8. It says that in the initial rebellion that we talked about, that they served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years, and then they cried out for help. Now we're down the road a ways, and they last 18 years before they cry out for help. So you see, not only have they gotten used to sin and progressively gotten worse, they've also gotten used to the judgment of God. And have, for lack of a better way of saying it, they have lasted longer in the oppression, which is the judgment of God. Unless we turn to the Lord and serve the Lord, we naturally get a little calloused, I guess maybe is the word, toward the Lord, toward His drawing, toward His judgment, toward all of those things. And so we see that progression in the nation of Israel. It happens individually to people today. It happened corporately to the nation of Israel in the Old Testament times. Verse 15 says, "But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised them up a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, a man left-handed, and by him the children of Israel sent a present unto Eglon, the king of Moab." This is one of my favorite stories in the Bible, in particular in the Old Testament, and I'm not exactly sure why, except for one reason, and I'll tell you that later. But verse 15 tells us that Ehud was left-handed. Now, it mentions that for a couple of reasons. One, it was very unusual. Even today, there aren't very many left-handed people. I got to thinking about this, and I tried to think of how many people that I knew personally who are left-handed. I can only think of one. I don't know about you guys. You know, you just don't see left-handed people very often. I'm sure it was true in ancient times as well, and even today, maybe not quite as much as they used to, but, you know, when a little child would come through school and use his left hand, they'd try to get him to convert to the right hand. Don't you think they did that in ancient times as well, maybe even more so? So the fact that Ehud was left-handed was very unusual. The second reason it was mentioned is because it was very significant, and we'll get to that in just a minute. And then he said that he took the children of Israel sent at the hand of Ehud a present unto Eglon, and I may get Ehud and Eglon reversed, so you just bear with me, okay? The present was probably the tribute money, the tax that Eglon had imposed upon the nation of Israel. They had to bring it to him. I don't know if it was monthly or, you know, annually, whatever it was, but that present that he brought was probably the tax money, the tribute money. Verse 16 says, "But Ehud made him a dagger which had two edges of a cubit length, and he did gird it under his raiment upon his right thigh." Now, you'll notice the significance. We're talking about right and left. Everything is right and left, and because it's important. Ehud made a dagger, a double-bladed, double-sided dagger, about 18 inches long. A cubit was a normal-sized man. From the tip of his middle finger to the tip of his elbow. That's about 18 inches. Now, in all honesty, in ancient times, it might not have been quite that long, because men in particular, Jewish men in particular, were a little bit smaller in size than the average male today. So, but somewhere, you know, 12 to 18 inches, something like that, is this dagger. He makes it, and then he straps it to his right thigh, underneath the clothing somehow on his right thigh. So he's left-handed, puts it on his right thigh so that he can reach out and use it with his left hand. Okay, verse 17. "And he brought the present unto Eglon, king of Moab, and Eglon was a very fat man." Don't you love that? This is another reason why I like this story. He was a very fat man. Oh, we would find that politically incorrect today, wouldn't we? We couldn't write that today. That'd be offensive to everybody who was overweight. "And when he had made an end to offer the present, when he was through giving him the money, he sent away the people that bear the present." Now, as my understanding, this is Ehud. Someone carried the money and came with him, and they made some sort of a presentation, you know, a ceremony, and presented the money to Eglon, and then after that, Ehud sent everybody else away. Verse 19 says, "But he himself turned again from the quarries that were by Gilgal, and said to Eglon, 'I have a secret errand unto thee, O king,' who said, 'Keep silence,' and all that stood by him went out from him." After they presented the money or the gift, whatever it was, Ehud sent everybody away, and then he came back. It says he made it to the quarries that were by Gilgal. I have no idea what the distance that was from where he was. The quarries was an area where there were groups of stone images. Perhaps they were false gods. Perhaps they were images of kings or other people. I don't know. But this was an area where they were together. When he got there, he sent everybody else on home, and he went back. And he told Eglon, he said, "Listen, I have a secret message for you from God." Well, because it was a secret, Eglon told everybody, all of his attendants, whoever was there, his guards and all, he said, "Everybody leave. This man has a secret message for me." Okay, here's what happened. Verse 20 says, "Ehud came unto him, and he was sitting in a summer parlor, which he had for himself alone, some sort of a dwelling home or, you know, summer home. And Ehud said, 'I have a message from God unto thee.' And he arose out of his seat, and Ehud put forth his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly." Now let me read the next verse and we'll go back. "And the haft," that is the handle, also went in after the blade, and the fat closed upon the blade, so that he could not draw the dagger out of his belly, and the dirt came out. You know, all that seems unnecessary to me. That verse 22, they could have left that out, but he included it. He thrust the dagger into Eglon's body far enough that the entire dagger and the handle, that the fat closed in around all that, and he tried to get it out and he couldn't, so he just left it in there. The Bible says that the dirt came out, and I don't want to get very descriptive. That just means what was inside of him came outside of him through this wound that the dagger had made. And you can imagine, again, not to get too descriptive, but as Ehud tried to pull that thing out, the wound is going to get bigger and bigger. So it's kind of a gruesome thing. Now here's what I want you to think about. The chances are very good that when Ehud came with this gift, that there was some sort of inspection, a search. I don't know what, if there were, probably if there were any visible weapons, the guards, Eglon's guards probably, you know, made them put their weapons down. That's what you would do. If you went in to see the president today and you had a gun strapped to your side, they'd make you take it off. There's a possibility, I think, fairly good possibility. These people, these Israelites now, were oppressed by the Moabites. They were their slaves. They were their servants. And it's only natural to think that your servant, if given the opportunity, would rise up against you to be free. They didn't want to pay the taxes, but they were doing it. So I think it's reasonable to assume that there was some sort of a search made when they... And especially now when Ehud comes into Eglon's presence and it's just the two of them. No guards are present. So I think it's highly likely that they patted him down. But there were hardly any left-handed people in the world at that time. Who would ever think, if you're a right-handed warrior, your dagger is on your left thigh because you draw it and you use it. If they patted him down, they patted down his left side. Not the right side, which is where the dagger was. I thought about that, and because every time I read this story, I'm struck by the fact that there's it's a big deal made out of the fact that he was left-handed and that it was on his right thigh and all these things. And I think the big deal was made because that's the way that God got the weapon into the presence of Eglon so that he could be executed. Here's what I think that means for us today. We ministers get up behind the pulpit, and Sunday school teachers get in their Sunday school classes, and we tell Christians, God made you specifically the way He made you for a specific purpose. I've had people tell me that, and I'll be honest with you, for about 40 years of my life, I wasn't sure that was true. I didn't feel like that I was doing anything different than anybody else. But the truth is, God made Ehud left-handed for a specific moment in time to be the deliverer of the children of Israel when they cried out to him because of the oppression of the Moabites. So however you are constructed, whatever talents we have, whatever gifts or abilities, whatever knowledge we have, you know, there are some people that have the gift of being able to learn. I'm not one of them, but I know a couple of people that they have the gift of being able to learn. Whatever you have, God has given you specifically for a specific purpose in His service, in His work. The reason sometimes that we don't ever realize it is because we never give ourselves fully to His service and fully to His work so that He can use us. God called upon Ehud to be the deliverer of Israel, the judge of Israel, and Ehud surrendered. And don't you imagine that he may have thought, well, what can I do? Lord, I'm a left-handed guy. It would be a disadvantage in the battlefield, maybe. maybe all of his life, like most other left-handed people, he went, well, you need to learn how to do things the right way with your right hand. Maybe the other kids, sounds like a silly thing, but maybe the other kids made fun of him when he was a kid. They probably did. He was different, noticeably different. And yet God made him that way specifically for a purpose, and he yielded to God, and God used him specifically the way he intended to. Don't worry about the differences that you have from other people. If you are different in some way, embrace it and find a way to use it for the glory of God. Or just tell the Lord, I know you made me this way for a reason. Please use me this way in your service. And listen, he'll do it because he made you that way for a reason. Okay, let's go back now to the scripture. That was my sermon for the night. Verse 23. Then Ehud went forth through the porch and shut the doors of the parlor upon him and locked them. So he closed the doors, the interior doors, and locked them from the inside and went out through the back way, through the porch somehow. So the guards who are outside don't see him leave. When he was gone out, his servants came, and when they saw that, behold, the doors of the parlor were locked, they said, surely he covereth his feet in his summer chamber. This may be one of the other reasons this is one of my favorite things. He covereth his feet is a euphemism for going to the restroom. Isn't it funny the things that God uses? I'm serious now. So the guard, it's been a while since Eglon and Ehud have had their little powwow. The guards are standing outside the door. Maybe they're getting a little nervous. They've not heard anything for a little while, but you don't interrupt the king. The king sent you out, so you don't interrupt the king. So maybe they knock on the door. They try the door, and it's locked from the inside, so they wait a little while, and it gets to be a little longer, and one of them says, well, you know, it's probably going to the restroom. We don't want to bother him. I want you to notice what happened. Verse 25. And they tarried, that's important, they tarried till they were ashamed. They waited so long that they thought, well, we've waited too long. And behold, he opened not the doors of the parlor. Therefore, they took a key and opened them, and behold, their Lord was fallen down dead on the earth. While they tarried, Ehud made his escape. God used the fact that these two guards would think that their king was going to the restroom and they wouldn't disturb him, and so they would wait. So God used that moment, those moments when they tarried, to allow Ehud to escape. Everything in this scenario is the plan of God, from the birth of a left-handed judge to the delay of two guards waiting on their king to go to the restroom. I know it sounds a little funny, but it's all at the hand of God, orchestrated at the hand of God. We talk about God being involved in the world. We talk about God being the sovereign ruler of the world. We talk about God directing the affairs of mankind. And boy, here's an example of the great detail that God directs in the lives of his people. All right, verse 26, and Ehud escaped while they tarried and passed beyond the quarries and escaped unto Seirath. And it came to pass when he was come that he blew a trumpet in the mountain of Ephraim, and the children of Israel went down with him from the mount, and he before them. And he said unto them, follow after me, for the Lord hath delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand. He blew a trumpet, sounded a trumpet, gathered up the people, told him what he'd done. I've killed Eglon. He's dead. This is our chance. God is delivering us. This is our chance to defeat the Moabites and to get out from under their oppression. The rest of that verse says, and they went down after him and took the fords of Jordan toward Moab and suffered not a man to pass over. And they slew of Moab at that time about 10,000 men, all lusty and all men of valor. And there escaped not a man. All of the vibrant, strong warriors of Moab, 10,000 of them, were killed at this time. Verse 30 says, so Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 40 years. So God delivered them from the oppression of the Moabites, and for 80 years they were at rest. And then we just have one verse about the next judge of Israel. After him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel. He also was a judge of Israel. An ox goad was a stick about 8 or 10 feet long, about 6 inches thick, 6 inches round. Had a sharp metal tip on one end of it that they used to goad the ox, to herd them, to direct them, however you wanted to do, to prod them and turn them. On the other end was sort of a little flat, curved blade. They used that for cleaning plows, cleaning farm implements. But he used that farm equipment to slay 600 Philistine men to help deliver the Israelites from under their oppression. God can use anybody and anything under any circumstance to accomplish His will if the instrument He chooses to use is yielded to His hand. God can use you and me to do anything at any time under any circumstance if we will yield to His hand and let Him work through us. Thank you very much for coming tonight. If you'll stand, we'll be dismissed.